everyone, discover the insider secrets of the top tech hiring managers in the industry. Know the actual intelligence behind all the successful tech hires. I'm Priyanka and welcome to Hiring Managers 101 podcast. For this week's episode, I have the absolute pleasure of welcoming Janani Vasudevan, who's the Director of Software Engineering at Twilio. Her expertise lies in security and cloud services, having worked in product development and engineering management roles over the past two decades. Welcome to the podcast, Janani. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Priyanka. It's really an honor to be here and great to be sharing my insights with you all.
Yeah. How are you doing today, Janani?
Doing great. It's a Friday and Fridays are always great, right? So
yeah.
And it's, yeah, we just got away from snow and so we have a lot of sun here. So it's really nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm very happy to have you here as well. So to start off, can you tell us a bit about, you know, yourself? And I'm curious to know about like how your journey began in engineering and what drives your passion for it as well.
Sure. So I was born and brought up all in India. So I did my schooling and my undergrad back there. So I think the main thing that has driven me all throughout my life has been like my the principles that, you know, have been instilled in me by my parents. Mainly my dad used to tell me that do whatever you want, but just make sure that you're really good at it, right? And if you can relate that to the India of like 20 years ago, I mean, it was not like you have to be an engineer or a doctor, and that was a relief sometimes to hear about it. But I think like that really made me, you know, want to kind of discover what I like and what I want to do. Early on in my in life, I started, you know, we got a new 486 assembled computer. I think during my 10th standard summer vacation, and I enrolled in a coding camp and I really loved it. And I think like that's where my passion for it started. And after finishing my schooling, I got into College of Engineering Indy in Chennai. And that's a very esteemed program. And I was really happy to get into it. And I think during my 4 years in college there, I really realized that this is what I want to do. Like I want to be an engineer. And, you know, that led to it. And I first started my career with Microsoft back in India, in Hyderabad. I worked there for about 6 years. And then I moved to Microsoft in Seattle. And, you know, over the course of my career, I got to kind of work on, like you said, engineering and product management, customer relationship kind of roles. And finally, I'm now in Twilio here based in Boulder, Colorado. So I think it's been a career that has been more, it's sometimes like, you know, jumping from engineering to product, but also in most other cases, like, you know, very, predictable, I would say.
Yeah, amazing. You know, you've had a really interesting journey and I'm very eager to, you know, hear about your journey and learn from it as well. So I want to talk to you about, you know, assessing the coding skills, you know, because finding the good talent is every hiring manager's, you know, dream. So sometimes it can feel like you're doing everything right and yet the results are not coming in. So I want to know how you go about assessing a candidate's coding skills. And can you take us through the process as well? And what are some key parameters you always keep in mind, you know, when you're assessing the coding ability? And what type of assessments have proved effective for you as well so far?
Yeah, that's a very great question. And I think this is an area that is evolving too. In my career, I think I've used different approaches and I'll talk a little bit about each of them and, you know, what my opinion about them is. And I don't think there is one way to solve this. Like that's basically what I've understood. So early on, in my career at Microsoft, there was a lot of whiteboard coding. I mean, you know, we typically do a phone screen where we, again, it's hard to kind of really do a coding assessment online, but, you know, I think we try to kind of make sure we use those online sharing tools as much as possible. But I think most of the coding was really whiteboarding through a problem, like seeing the thought process of a candidate, right? And that gives very good insights into, you know, then now just kind of like talking about the facets of what I'm looking for in a candidate. It's not the solution all the time. It's about the thought process, right? So how is the candidate thinking through the problems? Are they able to get themselves out of like being stuck at a point? Like how are they able to maneuver out of it based on the hints that are given? Like all of that is important because in day-to-day life, you're never alone. You're always going to be getting hints and help from others, and how you're able to kind of take that and proceed is important, right? So the whiteboard coding is one, but then like, you know, in about 4 or 5 years before, like towards the end of my career in Microsoft, we also explored the take home problems, which, you know, is a different category. I think it's really helpful because it takes the anxiety and pressure off the candidates, right? So you're saying, yeah, you give a take home problem, you put it on GitHub and you say, hey, 1 week before the interview, we want you to submit it. What it also provides us with is how a person is going to be really coding, like in a real environment. Like it's not just the code, it's the documentation, it's the testing. Like, are you thinking about it more holistically? And I think that really worked well. However, there are, it's definitely something that needs a lot more effort to be managed very well. So your problems, if it's on GitHub, there, after like a use of like maybe 10 times, like, there's so many solutions out there. Can you make sure that, so it's really difficult to make sure that the answers are not plagiarized. So that becomes really hard. So that we did try it. I think what we have to do is we need to kind of make sure we come up with new problems like every couple of months. We also, need to make sure that, we're looking at like comparing what the candidate has submitted versus like what they are saying in the interview, because sometimes there, there could be like, they might have looked at answers from somewhere or talked about like documentation in a particular way, but, there's no coherence in there. So it's definitely something that you can't just use it all alone, right? And recently, more recently in Twilio, we use like something like HackerRank. So it's like assessments, right? Technical assessments. And I think it's one of those approaches that I have found to be really useful in also for a couple of reasons. One is it's easier to manage. Again, you have to definitely keep changing the questions. So that's there. But, if you have a database of questions and you can actually have a set of questions that are tailored to different levels of the candidates, and it's much easier, so you kind of administer it like to 10 candidates, and then you can actually use the score over time. If you're going to have the same evaluators evaluating the assessments, we kind of get good at like really kind of ballparking and benchmarking candidates and saying, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. this looks like a really good solution, or this looks very, very artificial, there's something wrong going here. So I really think it's a good way, especially if you have a lot of candidates, if you're like hiring for 10 positions and you're going to be looking at 100, 200 candidates, it definitely provides that first level of being able to say, okay, I'm setting a benchmark of 85 or 90, and I'm going to look at the rest of it. And then, for higher levels though, like for staff engineers and principal engineers, we definitely also add in a technical screen before our full face-to-face interviews, because I feel like any amount of assessments or any of these methodologies can only go up to an extent. But after a particular seniority, you definitely want to kind of see how they are able to explain their solution. How are they able to talk you through it? Because you're now expecting those engineers not just to be able to code, but also to be able to guide others to code. So I think like those are the three or four different approaches I've kind of used. And I think my head right now is at the point where I feel like you need to use a combination of all of these, right? So the technical assessments are great. I think like they provide a very good way of like having the initial bar, but then really making sure that you're, wherever possible, if you need a take home assignment or you need to have the phone screens, like making sure that they are supplementing what you don't get from the technical assessments, that has really proved to be helpful.
Yeah, I think you've greatly put it as well. And you've given us like breakdown of how the entire assessment process works at Twilio as well. So I think it's going to help a lot of folks. And so like you said, finding the right fit is key. And usually from most of the cases of new recruits, who are fired or quit, only few are, due to technical skills. I think most of them are due to interpersonal problems, I would say. And so more often than not, hiring managers would have noticed these red flags throughout the process, and they simply either chose to ignore them and the problem is you can always teach the new recruits the skills to do a job, but you can't change them as a person. So, and there are these qualities that you simply cannot teach, but they could have a massive impact on, the culture, productivity and profits. So what are your thoughts on this? And I want to know, what are some key must-have traits you keep in mind while, hiring new employees? And how do you assess this, these skills as well? And what would you say is the magnitude of impact of a bad hire on your organization and team as well?
Amazing question. I think that it's really gets to the depth of hiring and like what is really hard with hiring. Like you're right, right? So I think the cultural fit to a company and to a team is super important. So I have had instances in my career where a bad hire has not just caused a problem just due to the bad hire itself, but also due to the impact that person could have on the others in the team, right? So it really makes it, makes the environment, you know, less optimal for everybody to work on. Yeah. So one of the things that I really like about, again, this is something that, you know, we used to do in Microsoft. We also do right now in Twilio as, you know, what we call Twilio magic values. I know in Microsoft, we actually had an asset appropriate interview at the end, which kind of did test for those. But we look for certain values, you know, and judge for things like, have you had instances where you've helped others? Like, how do you mentor people? Like, how do you, you know, work if they, you know, resolve a conflict? Let's say you have a conflict with a stakeholder, how do you resolve it? I think those kinds of questions really kind of help bring out the kind of inherent traits that might be an issue in terms of like not being a cultural fit, right? So some of the values that we've seen are, you know, is this person really being honest, open and honest? Like, are they being critical? Are they being able to think of themselves and like be critical of what they could have done well? You know, a very, very interesting question that I like to ask candidates is, what's the most useful critical feedback you've received in your career? Right, it tells me so much about the candidate. Like you can find the difference between like people who are like, oh yeah, I was really bad at this, and someone pointed this out. I'm so thankful to that person. Versus like you'll see things like, I don't really remember, or you know, people have just told me that I'm too smart. Right, so you kind of start seeing trends like that over, you know, as you talk to a lot of people on, okay, how is this person really valuing feedback from somebody else? How are they considering themselves as part of a team versus like, you know, them being somebody separate? The other things are also, you know, not really having any an open and honest kind of communications. Like, are they being manipulative, or how are they kind of trying to get around things? Like, I mean, I like to ask things like, okay, let's assume that, you know, give me a situation where things are failing in your project. Like everything is going like, you know, completely awry. How did you kind of get out of that? How did you resolve it? And there's a person on your team who's really bringing down the whole productivity. How did you kind of handle that? And you'll start seeing like there are sometimes situations where I'll see people who say, oh, I just escalated to my manager. I mean, that's the path I take, right? Versus someone who says, hey, I sat down with a person trying to understand, and I realized there's a personal issue going on in his life. So I was able to talk about it. It really exposes who the person is, you know, as a person. And so I think like those are the kinds of questions that I use. And again, you don't really need to have a separate interview to do that. I know that there are some companies that do that as a culture fit interview. I feel that could tend that could actually make the candidate be able to kind of talk about hypotheticals and like be a little bit more project what they want to be, not what they are. So I really like to put these questions as part of like a coding interview, as part of a hiring manager interview, or as part of a design interview, right? So when they're like, you know, doing some kind of coding or design, you know, just kind of pressing them on it. Okay, hey, do you think that, you know, what if I have to optimize this even more? How do I go about it? And then seeing how they act under pressure, seeing how, you know, they're open to feedback, where, you know, I can say sometimes, hey, I think there's something really wrong here. Can you fix that? And sometimes there may not be anything wrong there, but then they would be like, oh, I'm not really sure. And then some people would just like completely collapse. Some people would be like, okay, can you tell me what it is? I'll try to see if I can fix it. You know, that kind of really brings up that aspect of how social the person can be. Because I think the key element of everything is, how are they able to work with people, right? Are they able to work with different kinds of people? Are they able to consider that everybody has different skills and different strengths and opportunities, and being able to accommodate all of that? So I think it all comes to that. So evaluating their people skills and how they work with everybody around them is the crux of what I think is really important when you evaluate a cultural fit.
Yeah, I think I found your approach and what kind of questions you ask them really interesting, especially the one where you ask them what critical feedback they've got. I think it says a lot about the person, like you said. And so effective, you know, feedback mechanism is, you know, really key to have in an organization, both sharing and receiving the feedback. So I think organizations they usually focus on investing in successful candidates, you know, those who will be offered a job, and tend to pay a little attention to, like, or no attention to those who didn't make it past the initial screening. They don't take feedback from them. So, and also as far as feedback is concerned, I think most commonly candidates themselves either get a generic response or even worse, no response at all. So can you walk us through your idea of an effective feedback framework and any tips or examples you can share with us from your experience?
I think that it's definitely true, right? There are, like, with the amount of people that go through an interview, and in terms of, like, the people that actually, you know, you screen and then you get into the next stage, and then you do, you go through a technical screen, all of that, it can be hard sometimes to reach back to everybody. I think what would be great is, again, like, as you are taking the interview, as you are doing the interview, like, they're definitely making a note of, you know, all of the feedback that you have in terms of what was good about the person, what are the some of the cons, like, what are some things that are not a fit for the role that it is, because a lot of times the person might have all pros, but it's just that they may not be a good fit for the role that you have, right? So just making a note. I kind of take notes as I'm interviewing, because, like, there's a lot of time that you tend to forget what exactly happened after the interview. So I would say definitely taking a lot of notes, like, you know, making sure that you're writing down and spending some time after the interview to kind of go and collate back. So the same thing goes into the feedback itself. Like, when you write the feedback, calling out what were the pros, what were some of the cons you noticed, how you think this person will be a fit for your role versus not. And also, like, any kind of feedback that says, okay, what if this person, what could they do to kind of, you know, make themselves more of a fit for the role? So I think all of these are good things to write down and work with your recruiter to, you know, be able to kind of share that. A lot of times I've seen, you know, really good recruiters ask for feedback about, hey, I'm going to talk to this person. I know that they were not a fit for your role, but I really want to give them, like, you know, good feedback so that they can improve for the next time that they apply. I really love those conversations, because I feel like, you know, they're taking that interest and, like, you know, that effort, and it doesn't take a lot of time. We have all of the feedback. It's just communicating to the candidate and saying, hey, this is the reason. I think it makes a huge difference in terms of, like, you know, both helping them with their career and also, you know, making sure that the company is doing the right thing in terms of, just communicating that back. So I think definitely those are some tips I would say, making a note, having all of those notes in there and ensuring that, you know, you're working with a recruiter to kind of communicate that back. But the other aspect also sometimes is it may not be a fit for your role, which I've seen a lot of times. Like, you know, we have a candidate that's coming in at a higher level and they didn't qualify for it, but they would make an amazing principal engineer, or somebody who's at one level lower. Like, taking the initiative to connect with the right recruiters and making sure that, you know, you're getting them into the system, because you've invested so much time on them, and it's just that, you know, they're great, but they're not a fit for the role. Like, making sure that you make those connections, that's also would be, like, you know, really useful. In one of my previous roles, we actually came up with something called a talent pool, which, you know, where we would, like, say if you had four or five candidates that made it to the final round, and we could only offer to one, and then we found at least two other candidates that were pretty close, like, you know, we made sure that, you know, we could kind of add them into a talent pool which we shared with the whole rest of the organization. So if they were looking for a person before even actually going in and looking for somebody, you could look into the talent pool. Again, there's of course a timing thing, right? I mean, they may not be in the market for long, but it was great. I mean, because we sometimes see that, you know, we go through interviews and we have some great candidates, we don't want to lose them. So that was something that we ended up, like, working with the recruitment team and came up with. It was also very helpful because for diversity hiring, like, especially, like, you know, I have seen this. I have positions open, and sometimes, like, in the current location that I'm in Boulder, I never get any women applicants at all. Like, so, but those are all built through relationships, right? I have networks. I build these, you know, I have people talking to me about certain roles. All of these people that we want to kind of make sure that we are still landing them in a right role in our company. Like, I think that's where the talent pool really helps, where if you build relationships, you know the person well, and, you know, they're almost there, they're just not a fit for this particular role, making sure that, you know, you can utilize them across different roles. So I think those are some of the ideas that I use.
Yeah, I think I really like the part where you said taking notes is a great way to give feedback, as well as, you know, the, like you said, communication and building, you know, the relationships. And let's say even if you're not able to like take them or hire them, keeping them in the talent pool and nurturing them, you know, for future, that's a great way actually. And so the need to, you know, prioritize the employee career growth is really important. And so according to a Glassdoor study, I think career growth is among the top three reasons why employees leave a company. And, you know, giving your employees a crystal clear path into the future isn't always realistic or feasible. But however, what you can do is like lay out the foundations and provide them the initial stepping stone, at least. So if you give your employees a direction and the opportunity to further themselves, I think the chances are higher that the majority of them will continue to work, you know, hard for you. So what are your thoughts on this, and what steps can companies take to build an effective framework, you know, for employees' career development, based on your experience?
Yeah, I think employee career development is definitely an area that I think it's evolving. I feel like that's the best word to put it, right? So companies do it well, but then, you know, the conditions change. The way that, you know, employees look for guidance changes, and then like the companies don't change according to it. So I think that's the part where we need to really keep evolving with it. But one of the main things, I mean, what you asked me just reminded me of something a mentor once told me. They were like, okay, just think of like, you know, you have a candidate, you're trying to close on them, and then you're having like sell calls with them. How much time did you spend on that? Now compare that with how much time you're spending with a superstar on your team, telling them that, hey, you're doing a great work and, you know, keep doing this. And almost all the time, the answer is, you know, we spend disproportionately a lot of time on hiring new talent and like bringing them on board and like, you know, convincing them to, you know, come on to the company versus trying to kind of, you know, spend time on the talent that you already have in the company and making sure that you're not, you know, you're retaining them, right? You're not losing them. So I think that is something that has made me think about it. So one of the first things to really address here that I've kind of learned is a lot of times just education. So there is not a clear idea that so many of the employees lack in terms of like, what are the growth opportunities? What are the different career tracks that my company has? Like, can I grow it as an individual contributor? Up to what level? Or do I have to switch to being a manager? So which option is better for me? We know we do have a lot of frameworks which say, okay, this is your career ladder framework. Like, this is the expectations for each of the levels. But I feel like that this conversation on where do I start and where should I go, what's the expectation, sometimes like needs to happen. Like, so that's why I say education is the first thing, right? Having a conversation with my team about, hey, these are all the possible career tracks that you can have in this company. And this is where you will, you know, you can grow if you want to be an individual contributor. You do not have to lead if you don't want to lead. You can be an individual contributor throughout your career and like be successful. So I think like being able to kind of educate on that is important, right? The second one that kind of goes closely with education is showing them some role models. A lot of times people relate to, you know, people who have grown in and are in that particular career track that they are. So it's a lot more easier to talk about it. You say, hey, architect, this person, like, you know, was an IC. He joined as an IC1 and then he grew to be an IC2, 3, and then now he's an architect. Whereas there is this other person who was an IC1 who wanted to be a manager right from the start. So as soon as he went into IC4, he switched to the management track and now he's a director. So I think like just talking about all of these different role models or people who've been successful, I've seen like, you know, sometimes kind of grounds this truth for them that, okay, yeah, there are different possibilities and, you know, I can choose what I can really want to be. And then the final thing is definitely having like regular career conversations. So one of the things that I recommend is, you know, having one-on-ones weekly, but then like making one in four, that is like a monthly one-on-one, really a career check-in. Chatting about, hey, how is it going? Like, it's not like a whole, you don't write up a bunch of things and talk about it. You just discuss, are you heading in the right direction for where your goals are? Are there any kind of skills that you want to get, but you're not able to get? Or are you doing too much of something that, you know, you're very good at? Because I think that's another common thing. Somebody once taught me this whole ABC rule of like, you know, you need to do a lot, some amount of like A, B, and C, like above your skill level, below your skill level, and your current skill level. A lot of times people will end up like just gravitating to things that they're very comfortable with, like that's below their skill level or their current skill level. And what that does is like, you know, it gives you a sense, a false sense of, you know, I'm being successful, I'm learning, but you're not really learning because you're not pushing yourself to do something that's outside of your comfort zone. So in these conversations, I really like to ask that and say, are you feeling challenged? Do you feel slightly uncomfortable? Because that's a good position to be in, which means that you are growing and you are being challenged and you have the right kind of career growth. So I think those are the three things: education, like, you know, providing some examples and role models, and also like having regular career conversations. So those are, I think, the only ways really to kind of, you know, help the employees feel like they know where they're going, and also that we have their back and, you know, we're kind of helping them, coach them along the way to what they want to achieve.
Yeah, I think you've given some great ways on how, you know, companies can prioritize the employee career growth as well. And I really like the ABC rule, and having one-on-one calls and openly communicating with them, you know, like you said, monthly once at least, keep the one-on-one for the career discussion. I think it's a really great idea. And so before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask, so you've been in this industry for nearly, you know, two decades. Can you tell us a bit about how the industry has evolved over time, and can you share with us any lessons you have learned that, you know, have helped you gain new perspectives as well as shaped your approach to the industry?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing that I have learned is, you know, from when I started my career, I think I was not very exposed to you know, others, mentors, and like, you know, being able to kind of tap into the community. And if there is one advice that I would give my younger self, is to reach out more, is to, like, you know, ask for help, and like, you know, ask for help in a sense, not because you lack it, but just to kind of know a little bit more about what is happening, and like, you know, being able to tap into your network. I feel like, you know, there are so many opportunities that you don't know of. You know, until you kind of talk to the people around you, like, you know, leverage your network. And sometimes that might, you know, just that might just mean that, you know, you're going to get to them like later than you would. So I think that's my biggest learning, that it is this industry is completely a team sport for the most part, right? So it's not just you, it's about like, what is the context, and like, what is the situation that you are in? So which it's really important for you to assess where your skills are going to be of the most use. And for that, the only way that you kind of get to know that is by talking to mentors or talking to other, you know, people in your network, where you start discovering a little bit more, because the industry is evolving. Like you said, it is huge. I mean, we've moved from all of the companies that were like, you know, operating systems and providing like search engines and all of that are still there, but then like the industry is moving to so many of these utility driven, like, you know, you have Instacart, you have like Uber, all of these that are like becoming more of an utility driven thing. And I'm also seeing an increased, this is something I see actually of late, a lot of the employees and candidates that are looking for jobs are looking for a career. They're looking for something where they can make an impact, right? So either, you know, so tech for good, that's how we call it. But so making sure that they are in an industry where, you know, they're actually giving back to the community, or they're doing some good, like the impact can be felt. Or on the other hand, like, you know, making sure that they really want to focus on the culture of the company. I mean, it's no longer about like, it's less about the pay. It's less about like, you know, this is a technical challenge I want to work on, but more about, I want to make sure that, you know, every day I come to work, I feel like I am happy about coming to work and working with the people I do. So I think there is definitely a shift. I don't know if it's because of COVID or like, you know, some of the realizations that we've had during our isolation, but I think it's definitely getting to a more increased expectation in terms of the overall roundedness of a company rather than specific aspects.
Yeah, awesome. I think you've shared some really great, you know, takeaways. So yeah, that brings us to the end of our conversation. You know, it was super fun chatting with you, Janani, and thank you again for joining Hiring Managers 101 podcast.
Thank you so much for this. I really enjoyed the conversation too.
Thanks for listening to Hiring Managers 101 podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.